We see a host of savage, vulgar faces. We hear crude curses and smell the vodka. In the course of a discussion of obscene illustrations, Friedrich Vischer once maintained that there were pictures in which one could see stink. Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, for the first time, confronts us with the hideous idea that there may be compositions whose stink one can hear. What can one say, but really, really, Edward Hanslick, famous music critic and writer, is this how you really want to enter the history books? Tchaikovsky's ultimate revenge is that he's far more famous than you are. Nevertheless, Ed, you did write one of the most famous music reviews ever, Mazel Tov. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this is a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto. Sometimes you just gotta get out of town. This was definitely the case for one P.I. Tchaikovsky in 1877, after marrying Antonina Miliukova. For him, she was both physically and emotionally repellent. They were married in May, and he tried to commit suicide by wading into the chilly Moscow River in September. He soon fled to St. Petersburg, and from there took an extended trip to Europe with his brother Anatoly. Fortunately, Europe was just the ticket. Far from hearth and home, he was able to compose again. In short order, he finished the Fourth Symphony and the opera Eugene Onegin. Tchaikovsky settled in Clarens, Switzerland, and was joined by his friend and probably lover, Josef Kotek. Kotek was a violinist who was studying with Josef Joachim in Berlin, and he brought with him lots of music for violin and piano, and he and Tchaikovsky read through the repertoire. It was after accompanying Kotek in Lalo's Symphonie Espagnole that Tchaikovsky decided to write a violin concerto. The composer was inspired and charmed by the work and said, in the same way as Leo Delibes and Bizet does not strive after profundity, but he carefully avoids routine, seeks out new forms, and thinks more about musical beauty than about observing established traditions as the Germans do. I think, declared Tchaikovsky, that music's entire future is now in France. Tchaikovsky didn't play the violin, but fortunately he had Kotek for advice and counsel. The work, orchestration and all, was completed in about a month, and Tchaikovsky returned to Russia in late April of 1878. Tchaikovsky, always nervous about having his homosexuality exposed, decided not to give either the dedication or premiere to Kotek. Instead, he chose Leopold Auer, the famous Hungarian virtuoso and pedagogue from the St. Petersburg Conservatory. Imagine his surprise when Auer rejected the work and refused the premiere. But you don't have to take my word for it, mes petits amis. On January 12, 1912, almost 20 years after Tchaikovsky's death, he told the following story to the Musical Courier. When Tchaikovsky came to me one evening about 30 years ago and presented me with a roll of music, great was my astonishment on finding that this proved to be the violin concerto dedicated to me, completed and already in print. My first feeling was one of gratitude for this proof of his sympathy towards me, which honored me as an artist. On closer acquaintance with the composition, I regretted that the great composer had not shown it to me before committing it to print. Much unpleasantness might then have been spared to us both. Warmly as I had championed the symphonic works of the young composer, who was not at that time universally recognized, I could not feel the same enthusiasm for the violin concerto, with the exception of the first movement. Still less could I place it on the same level as his strictly orchestral compositions. I am still of the same opinion. My delay in bringing the concerto before the public was partly due to this doubt in my mind as to its intrinsic worth, and partly that I found it would be necessary, for purely technical reasons, to make some slight alterations in the passages of the solo part. This delicate and difficult task I subsequently undertook and re-edited the violin solo part, and this is the edition which has been played by me and also by my pupils unto this very day. It is incorrect to state that I had declared the concerto in its original form technically unplayable. What I did say was that some of the passages were not suited to the character of the instruments, and that however perfectly rendered, they would not sound as well as the composer had imagined. Auer concluded finally that the concerto has made its way in the world, and after all, that is the most important thing. It is impossible to please everybody. The piece lay fallow for 2 years until Tchaikovsky's publisher informed him that a young violinist named Adolf Brodsky had learned it and wished to do the premiere. Brodsky was no slouch. He was 30 years old and would go on to become concertmaster of the New York Symphony and the Halle Orchestra in Manchester. Eventually, he would become director of Manchester's Royal College of Music. Brodsky was a determined advocate for Tchaikovsky's concerto and tried without success to have it performed in Paris with the Cologne and Pas de Loup orchestras before he was able to persuade the director of the Vienna Philharmonic, Hans Richter, to try the work. The performance took place in December of 1881 and seems to have been a disaster. Brodsky had done his job in preparing the solo part, but Hans Richter and the Vienna Philharmonic let him, and Tchaikovsky for that matter, down. Richter did not allocate anywhere near sufficient time for the new piece, and most of his few rehearsal minutes were devoted to correcting mistakes in the parts. The orchestra, fearing the unknown, played everything pianissimo, and the results were disastrous. Brodsky was applauded, but the orchestra and the work were booed and hissed. Here is Hanslick's complete review. The Russian composer Tchaikovsky is surely no ordinary talent, but rather an inflated one. Obsessed with posturing as a man of genius, lacking discrimination and taste, the same can be said for his new, long, and ambitious violin concerto. For a while, it proceeds soberly, musically, and not mindlessly, but soon vulgarity gains the upper hand and dominates until the end of the first movement. The violin is no longer played. It is tugged about, torn, beaten black and blue. The adagio is well on the way to reconciling us and winning us over, but it soon breaks off to make way for a finale that transports us to the brutal and wretched jollity of a Russian church festival. We see a host of savage, vulgar faces, we hear crude curses and smell the vodka. In the course of a discussion of obscene illustrations, Friedrich Vischer once maintained that there were pictures in which one could see stink. Tchaikovsky's violin concerto, for the first time, confronts us with a hideous idea that there may be compositions whose stink one can hear. Well, let's decide for ourselves, shall we? To the music, mes petits amis, and not a moment too soon. We begin with a very civilized opening tune. It's civilized, balanced, and maybe a bit nostalgic or backward-looking, but it's very attractive and memorable. Don't get too attached to this tune because we never hear it again in the piece. In fact, this is a question musicians have pondered for a long time. Why begin with a theme you have no plans to return to? What was Tchaikovsky thinking? Sadly, we will never know. For me, it's a musical red herring. However, don't despair because out of this tune grows the following contrasting idea. With this humble rhythm and melody, Tchaikovsky is going to do something extraordinary. I promise you, you can do a lot with yum bum ba-da-dee-da-dum. Now it's time to meet our soloist. Unlike some concertos, like the Piano Concerto No. 1 by Brahms, for example. By the way, if you'll allow me a sidebar, Brahms and Tchaikovsky share a birthday, May 7th, and Tchaikovsky once referred to Brahms as a giftless bastard. Unlike other concertos where you wait forever to hear the highly paid soloist, we meet our virtuoso right away. First, they have a bit of meandering. Then we meet our first theme. Note it uses that rhythmic idea by yum bum ba-da-dee-da-dum stated by the orchestra earlier. And by the way, it's gorgeous and something audiences and violinists live for. Here's its second and also beautiful iteration with double and triple stop strings. Having established theme one, we can't just keep repeating it all day unless we're Philip Glass, and so we need some transitional music to get us to theme two, which is provided by both solo violin and orchestra. And here's theme two, right on time. Whereas theme one was heroic, theme two is passionate. Now that our justifiably highly paid soloist has introduced us to both themes, they have some great virtuosic stuff to wrap up the exposition. What would follow is a development of the two themes we've just heard, but instead, Tchaikovsky gives the orchestra a chance to play theme one in grand style reminiscent of a Polonaise, and it also has the advantage that it gives our soloist a chance to catch their breath. Now it's time for the violin to develop theme one. After another big statement of theme one, we get the solo cadenza. This is a long section where the orchestra drops out and the violinist gets to display their amazing abilities. During the 18th century, these sections would be improvised, but during the 19th century, composers tended to write them out completely, as does Tchaikovsky. Both themes are referred to in the cadenza, but since theme two has been so neglected so far, we give it equal time. Thank you. Now it's time to return to our themes 1 and 2, and with the aid of a flute, we are taken home. Here's theme 1. Here's theme 2. Between now and the end of this movement, we have tons of thrilling pyrotechnics, and we end with great brilliance and enthusiasm. It is not uncommon for audiences to applaud after this lengthy first movement. An incredible display of high quality music and showmanship. I have done it myself. If you happen to, I'm all for it. We go on. Wir machen weiter. After the concerto's first run-through in April of 1878, Kotek, Tchaikovsky's brother Modest, and Tchaikovsky himself felt that the middle slow movement did not properly match the outer two. Tchaikovsky repurposed this music as the meditation from a three-movement suite called Souvenirs d'un lieu cher, Memories of a Special Place. Tchaikovsky then composed the lyrical canzonetta that we hear today as the second movement. Toward the middle of the movement, we get a nice contrasting theme. And then we return to our opening beautiful melody. Note the lovely clarinet and flute writing. Towards the end of the second movement, the solo violin disappears and the orchestra has a long interlude. Tchaikovsky, perhaps influenced by Beethoven and Mendelssohn, decided to join his second and third movements by way of a transitional section. Here's what it sounds like. There's no mistaking the beginning of the third movement. It's marked Allegro Vivacissimo, Italian for super darn fast, and its opening notes explode right before your very eyes. ¶¶ The violin soon enters, and like the first movement, it meanders a bit before it finds itself. Then we are off and running with theme A. Our contrasting theme B is probably what the critic Edward Hanslick referred to when he said, "We see a host of savage, vulgar faces, we hear crude curses, we smell vodka." The theme begins with open fifth drones in the low strings. It's Russian and folksy, just the sort of thing a German musical snob like Hanslick would detest. But how could Hanslick not notice that this theme also had a beautiful lyric side? Eventually, we return to our home key of D major and our main theme A. If we're well acquainted with these two themes, we are set for this movement. The ending of the concerto is positively thrilling. And so, mes petits amis, what is indeed great about Tchaikovsky's violin concerto? 1. The sheer beauty and quality of Tchaikovsky's melodic material in all the movements. Whether he wants to be heroic, lyrical, or virtuosic, he succeeds. These are ageless, excellent tunes, and justifiably so. 2. It's one of the four great violin concertos. Along with Beethoven, Brahms, and Mendelssohn, this concerto has quite rightly become one of the pillars of the repertoire. In the hands of a good soloist, it shines. In the hands of a great one, it combines both soloist, orchestra, and composer into something greater than all three. 3. It's a great example of a composer sticking to his guns and showing critics, pedagogues, and naysayers that he, P.I. Tchaikovsky, knew better than all of them. While the concerto may have had a troubled birth, its adulthood has proven to be immortal. I'm WBJC's Jonathan Polevsky, and this has been a Baltimore Symphony Orchestra podcast for Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto.